astrologer, a clairvoyant, and a thought leader, and I started this podcast to have eclectic and impactful conversations about astrology as well as all things spiritual and personal development. Hey, this is Sabrina Monarch of Monarch Astrology and Magic of the Spheres podcast, and in this video I'm going to be talking to you about the upcoming, or really the new moon that's happening now. It's happening exact at 1 a.m. on March 10th, 2024 at 20 degrees of Pisces. And I'm going to share the chart with you for a moment here. Ignore the house placements, of course, it's just the local chart for Portland. But we're looking at this new moon in 20 degrees of Pisces here, and it's sandwiched at the midpoint of Saturn and Neptune in Pisces, who currently are co-present in Pisces, but they're not in orb. They're not in that 10 degree orb of a conjunction. But the moon, the new moon, is building a bridge. So there's something significant in that way about this lunation. And that's mostly what I'm going to be exploring with you in my interpretation of it. So a little bit about that Saturn-Neptune conjunction. It's going to enter orb briefly this summer and then separate as Saturn retrogrades around the autumn. And Saturn and Neptune are going to exact their conjunction eventually in 0 degrees of Aries in February of 2026. So that's a little bit ahead, but we're starting to feel it, and especially this lunation might be an emotional or consciousness preview of the nature of the Saturn-Neptune conjunction. So I'm going to come back to Saturn-Neptune as an archetypal combination and just start us off with Pisces, right? The feeling tone of Pisces, as well as the particular decan of Pisces, the third decan that this lunation is happening in. So this third decan of Pisces is associated with the Ten of Cups. So that's the card featuring like a happy family and dogs running around underneath a rainbow. It's a card that has to do with the search for and the realization of ultimate emotional fulfillment. And this can correlate with actual experiences of the sublime, as well as these actual experiences of our dreams coming true, as well as the illusory things that we mistake for that. So there's a really deep oceanic emotionality of that. You know, if we think about what is your ultimate high dream, right? Pisces is such a dreamy sign. And that can be such a beautiful spiritual experience in this life. And it can also be a lot of fantasy and addiction and sadness and melancholy when we don't feel like our life matches up to that, or we're not quite sure it'll ever happen or we'll ever have it, or we're comparing our life in comparison to that. So there's actually a lot at stake when it comes to having really big dreams. And one of the challenges of the Piscean nature, so this might be a theme emotionally, you'll have to find out how it filters into your life and story particularly. But one of the things about Pisces is that it's a dual-natured sign. It's partly incarnate, part flesh, part earth, and then it's also part spirit, transcendent, beyond, cosmic. And our nature, part of our nature seeks these temporary experiences that have a lot to do with our current lifetime, you know, our partnerships, money, things that we want to experience in life, things that really attach us to our current personality and ego, as well as things that are more ultimate, infinite, transcendent, those spots you pop into where you blend into the oneness of everything and you're not so concerned with your personal problems per se, or you can laugh at it all or kind of be in the magic of everything. And part of the erotics of living, being these dual natured people who are part earth and part spirit, is that we tend to do both at the same time, right? And this is something that we really work through with the Virgo Pisces axis, is that perceived split between matter and spirit, right? The perceived kind of judgment of which experiences are spiritual and which are mundane, which experiences are sacred and which are profane, right? So the erotics of like being human involves that sometimes our temporary experiences, right, the realization of our dreams, these things that are sublime and transcendent feeling that bring us closer to God, are very earthly, right? It's being in love. It's having peak experiences that have you feeling close to the universe and like you forgive everything that's ever happened in your life, like those kinds of really big peak emotional states. These are times when we feel blessed by the rains, like the universe is personally working out in our favor, like we're at oneness. And this being said, the search for our earthly and temporary experiences to match that imprint of our most cosmic desire nature, our personal high dream, that kind of vision or emotional sense of what would make life the most worth living, this thing, this vapor, this dream is easily imprinted onto situations that aren't quite the thing, if our fantasy is strong enough and our discrimination is weak enough. So you might think about that in terms of your experiences of hope and despair, of thinking that something is going to save you from the drought and then experiencing a disillusionment when it's not all quite that you thought it might be. And so that's kind of the emotional drama of this third decan of Pisces, is that profound search for ultimate fulfillment in the heart and in our relationship with spirit and how that merges with our earth experience. This is one I know really well, by the way. I'm like feeling very emotional in a good way about this new moon, just kind of thinking about my life and how many times I've worked through this kind of theme, how many literal novels I've written about it. If you relate to this kind of thing, I did write a novel called Hungry Ghosts of Paradise. That's an audio novella on Magic of the Spheres podcast. And I'll link in the notes the Spotify playlist with all the chapters outlined. But it's a story basically of extreme kind of spiritual magical romance and disillusionment. It's like a tragic love story. And, you know, that much I can give away. But it was really well received by the listeners and was really transformative to write. But yeah, just kind of how we really reckon with peak states. So now I've outlined that the search is for ultimate emotional fulfillment. The crisis is kind of like, how does that actually line up with our lives? And where are we lost in the sauce and kind of projecting fantasy onto something that can't hold it? And so not all is lost in that, right? Like one of the reactions is to become really jaded, really despairing. The sense like when a dream bubble pops, like that's it for me. Like it's unbearable. It's devastating because it's not just the loss of the particular situation that was coveted, the particular dream coming into manifestation that was coveted. It's a sense of being kicked out of the kingdom of God, you know, falling from paradise, falling from grace. It takes on a much deeper epic proportion. And that's not ultimately true, right? Like you have to think, if something strikes that deep of an emotional disillusionment chord, it's not just an emotional crisis, it's a spiritual crisis. There's something there in terms of being able to trust life, right? And to have our receptivity to, you know, like our deepest joy intact, you know, to not go into this kind of like fog or this shutdown, though that happens temporarily, of, you know, life just isn't good. Like my dreams just aren't possible. And there's a disconnection from our desire nature and our heart, you know, that there's a real struggle that happens inside of that. So the power inside of this is to reclaim the dream or the fantasy from the projection, right? To really realize like, that was my heart, like that was my capacity for love, like that was my dream all along. And to allow what has been projected into that particular form or particular manifestation, particular hope, to recycle and come back to the soul, to the beholder. And this, I think, is kind of similar to the process of aligning our souls with our bodies, right? Being embodied, like being landed inside of our incarnation, to have our soul all the way on and to be like in the expressiveness, like in the particularity of our personality and our human, right? To like have those forces come together as opposed to, you know, having one life here and then another in the clouds and fantasy that's not like realized and brought down. And so this is also, you know, that process, I think, is similar to maturing our visionary life and our dream life. This is what I wrote about and shared on this channel for Saturn and Pisces. I'll also link that in the notes. I called it maturing the dream, right? Like having a relationship to, we have to take responsibility for our dreams with Saturn and Pisces, but we also have to grow up and sober up from illusions, right? These places where we are inherently victimized and we think that we're going to be saved by something outside of ourselves, and projecting that kind of story, you know, as opposed to what does it mean to take responsibility for the creation of what you really desire, and even just for the responsibility to hold that, because when it comes to our deepest desires and wishes, it's incredibly vulnerable. There's a lot on the line because there's that sense of, well, it may not work out. So why am I going to make my heart gaping open and raw and like on the line for something if I can't ensure, you know, like it's really a question of faith. But I think there's something here about being able to maturely interact with our dreams that we perceive as out there. You know, if this thing happens in my life, if this perfect partner manifests, if I get the acclaim that I'm looking for, et cetera, et cetera. Being able to see the things in our life as they are now for what they are, right? And feel where there is true invitation for a dream to unfold and for our actions to participate with that dream. So one example in terms of, say, something like romance is like when people date potential, right? Or they invest in something that like has like some major logistical issues on paper, but they're like, you know, it's karmic, we're in love, it's gonna work out, and ultimately it dissolves in some sense because it just wasn't practical, it wasn't rooted, you know, or someone who's like obviously unavailable, but being like, well, they'll come around or something, you know, like those kinds of dynamics. There's a lot of fantasy that's going on to reading the actual cues and signals that are being given. There's a lack of willingness to be with the reality of what's happening, right? And this is partly like a coping thing that happens in Pisces, and it's not always the worst thing, right? Like there's stories, for example, of people that are in captivity, prison of some kind, and every night they dream about something they're gonna do when they get out, right? They dream of their life as a way of keeping their spirit alive. And when they're released, when they're freed, they, you know, go full-heartedly into that dream that they dreamt inside of that prison state. And I think that this is, if we think about time as a form of prison, right? Like say you want to grow up really fast. Like as a kid, you dream of things that are going to take years for it to happen. And it's like, rather than just being okay with being a kid, you can't wait to be an adult. You can't wait for those types of freedoms. And, you know, or you're in like a really difficult life situation where you don't feel like you have a lot of way out. You feel really stuck. And so every night you dream of a better life, right? Like you keep your spirit alive on a dream when your life falls short in comparison. And then when you get your break, right, when things start to move, you go full force into that dream. This is something that the spirit does to keep alive. And there is a misuse of that when we actually have more mobility in reality and we're choosing to stay stuck because of a illusion or fantasy of like, you know, I'm imprinting my whole dream consciousness onto this limited situation and God help me, it's gonna fucking happen and you can't change my mind, you know, like that kind of willful delusion perhaps, or unconscious, not so willful delusion that's happening. Not like I'm speaking from experience or anything. But we're speaking so far of the new moon itself in the third decan of Pisces. And these themes also correlate with the archetypal signature of Saturn-Neptune when they come together. But I want to speak more about that and just kind of pivot to that. Again, remember that the new moon is at the midpoint of Saturn and Neptune, so there's some kind of Saturn-Neptune feeling or realizations that we might be having. So what to look for here is that when Saturn and Neptune come together, things that felt more real and stable, Saturn, can begin to fade, Neptune, which is often a bittersweet experience. Saturn's reality is a world of cause and effect. It's a world of, cause and effect is the simplest way to put it, but it's also like the constructed world in which we live. It's the, I don't know why I always like to use this example. I kind of cringe at myself, but it's like, technically, you could get a bunch of roses and go like running in the street naked and just like throwing roses everywhere. Like, you can do that, but the social contract is not going to be vibing with it. It's not going to be okay. There's going to be some kind of consequence. So that's kind of like Saturn, where it's like, what are the actual boundaries of the reality? And that takes place in a social context. It takes place in a law context. It takes place in like a bone and body context, where it's like you can push your body so far to a limit until an injury or something happens where, you know, the body can't take that level of stress. So Saturn's where we have those kind of hard limitations within the structure and in the bones of our reality matrix. And not everything that's happening within Saturn is ultimately real, right? Like, I think about this other example of, if you were to go to an uninhabited, or an inhabited island, but like an indigenous culture, not a lot of interaction with the rest of the world, and you might experience a spiritual quality to that island where there's been a cultivated relationship with the land spirits, there's offerings made to the land, and there's a palpable frequency there, versus go to a skyscraper business kind of building in New York City, and you're not going to have that same immediate like access to that magical cultivated earth-based magic field. You're going to be in the New York City business like human field. And both of those realities are real, right? And like, they are a social context, essentially. And why I'm kind of belaboring the point that they are realities that are real in a social context are not ultimate, is that they're time and place dependent. They're cultural constructs. Versus Neptune is more of this oceanic force of like raw, like pure spiritual energy. And it's an ocean that basically, like a tidal wave, can just swallow a whole city. And it's like, that's not real anymore. The ocean overpowered it. And so when we think like something that's real to us is overpowered by Neptune, that's bittersweet, because sometimes the thing that was real was a prison. It was a calcified limitation. It was something that was really holding our spirit in a tight box. And then Neptune comes and washes it open, and it's miraculous. It's redemptive. There's a magic to it, right? Versus the opposite experience, where something that we actually really depend on or want to stay real or want to count on dissolves and disintegrates. And there's a sense of real difficulty with that. And so with Saturn Neptune, there's often a spiritual coming of age process, right? Like, dealing with spiritual realities, like dealing with what is. And some of it, maybe we have to readjust to what the ocean, like what the spiritual force of reality is telling us. And the Saturn part of us is also trying to have a grip, you know? Like, you can be cosmic and like really blown out and really in the magic, but you also have to pay the bills and survive, right? So it's like we hold the Saturn, like we're holding onto reality to an extent, because you can be in the magic, but you also have to be a person and a person in the world. Another way that Saturn Neptune can work is that it can materialize the ineffable. It can materialize the mystery or the dream, allowing what was once invisible to become visible and tangible. So this is something, you know, if you identify as like a visionary of some kind, it's like you're really in that space of being with the invisible, the form of something that hasn't become material yet. And you're weaving that, you're building it, you're allowing it to channel into reality and become tangible. So when you're responsible to your spiritual visions and ideals, you can really become an architect. Like you can bring and create things in reality. And again, this is a process that will initiate you, because if you're trying to bring something into reality that doesn't want to be born into reality, right? Like a dream that no matter how hard you try, it's just not coming to pass. Sometimes the dream needs to change course, right? And it's really challenging to have wisdom there, because we don't want to give up on a dream, right? And we want to be loyal to our spirit. We don't want to betray our spirit, but we also don't want to, you know, make that one fight, like die on that one particular hill, like this is the dream, when the flow is like really showing us something else. And that being said, when you are on track, like when you are like really on the pulse of where your soul and spirit is wanting to take you, it's not like you won't have challenges and resistances. You will. So that's where there's a lot of spiritual maturation that's possible with Saturn Neptune, because it really confronts us to see the efficacy of our dreaming and to expand our view where we are too rigid about our ideals, too rigid about our spiritual, you know, or otherwise plans. So I'm going to keep musing on the new moon. I'm going to bring it down a little bit more to what the mood is, what you may be feeling and whatnot. But first, a few announcements before I do that, and a drink of tea. The first is that the Evolutionary Astrology Intensive that I teach is beginning soon, April 2nd. This is my amazing all-levels program that has been blowing students away for years with its depth and enchantment and the way that it accelerates astrological literacy. It's for people that want to be able to read charts as a whole, like want to feel rooted in the practice, as well as more advanced people who already are and just want to go deeper with Pluto or with me as a teacher and guide. People that maybe want to explore this soul-centered tradition and lineage. A lot of what I do on this channel in terms of forecasting is I'm really demonstrating my vision of astrology. Astrologers all bring different approaches to the craft, and part of studying with an astrologer or learning astrology is finding a teacher that you resonate with. So if you resonate with my transmissions, that's a pretty good sign that I may be a teacher for you if you're wanting to go deeper into astrology in a structured, supported way. I'm going to share a little bit more about the class at the end of this whole video, but I just wanted to remind you that applications are due generally March 29th. Though I welcome you earlier. March 29th is pretty much like last minute at that point, but we have a few weeks before then, so you can get that application in earlier. And if you're applying for tuition assistance, apply by March 15th. I'll speak a little bit more to that at the end too. But for now, you can find the course page and the application links. It's the same application for all cases in the notes. I also have an upcoming class on the first house. This is part of a depth imaginal series on the astrological houses, led by Aliza Penelope and myself. And to open the first house, we are working with the goddess of the dawn, Eos. You know, and the first house is marked by the ascendant or the rising sign. It's the place where the constellations are rising. It's the place where the invisible below the earth realm is coming into visibility. So the dawn, or Eos, is a guide that Aliza and I have been meditating with to channel teachings about the first house, right? Also drawing upon Hellenistic and evolutionary perspectives on the first house that we already have, but we always have to open it up. We always have to push the boundary of the known. And so in the process of working on, you know, creating this workshop behind the scenes with Aliza, it's been such a beautiful experience of discovery, of really reflecting on, you know, this concept that the dawn is breaking somewhere in the chart. It's the ruler of your ascendant, right? So we're going to open up the meaning of the first house as this place that you have agency, right? It's the place that you are kind of the main character. It's something that relates to your personality, but it's also how you move in a moment-to-moment way. And how does this part of you relate to the force of renewal? Because the dawn, you know, the literal dawn breaks for Earth every day. We know that's happening. And there's that pattern where it's like you're wandering through the mystery, maybe a night where you're like, you know, up in your anxiety and your lunacy, you know, and then the sun comes up and you start to settle, like things start to come more into a solar consciousness, right? And I'm all range here. I love the lunacy and I love the nighttime and the mystery vibe too. But there's something about that archetypal energy of wandering through the mystery and then the light breaking that we're exploring through the first house. And so really kind of tuning into a technique that we're offering here about reflecting on where dawn is alive for you, because it's actually going to be something nuanced and unique and specific to you based on a deeper read of the chart. So this workshop is going to be on March 14th at 10 a.m. Pacific. It's $30. It will be recorded if you can't attend live, but we will be taking questions and working with you in the audience and doing some workshop-y things with charts for those of you that are there live. Would love to invite you to this. These workshops, so far we did one already on the introduction to the houses, but it's been a really opening project. I really love working on it with Aliza, and we're creating really great, great workshops. So do join us for this. It's suitable for all levels. I would say just like having a basic knowledge of your chart as prerequisite. I don't tend to attract total beginners who have like never seen their chart before for things like this anyway, but it is all levels in the sense of you'll find the entry point in the workshop for you where you're at. So the link to read more about the workshop and sign up is also in the notes. And then lastly, Symbols of Power, my class on Pluto, is now up on YouTube. I'm leaving the link in the notes, or you can just find it on my channel's homepage. It was really rich. It was a transmission about the astrological Pluto, who Pluto is, and how Pluto shows up in our lives, like in a perpetual daily undercurrent, sometimes overcurrent kind of way. And I particularly explored the vantage point that our most provocative life experiences, right? As though you're in a dream and things are quite fascinating or disturbing, right? Like the things in life that are the most provocative to us. What if we read them as symbols of power, right? As part of your unconscious talking to you and giving you an invitation for an initiation. So you can learn more about Pluto and that particular angle, which comes from my own, you know, I work with Pluto as an interpretive starting point in charts, but it's also a force that I live with in my daily life. In addition to being, you know, a counseling and coaching astrologer, I'm always being worked by the archetypes and having my own initiations too. And I think it's that quality of like my lived-in relationship to the practice that really informs my teachings and my teaching spaces. So Yeah, I definitely invite you to check out the Symbols of Power workshop. I'll link it in the notes. And to apply for the Evolutionary Astrology Intensive and go even deeper, beginning April 2nd. And now I'll get back into the new moon in Pisces and just bring it down a little bit more into what's going on in your life. So one of the things is that the new moon is opposite Black Moon Lilith in Virgo. And Black Moon Lilith is like the kind of demonized feminine, this primordial feminine power that everyone kind of has their own Lilith journey in terms of how they relate to that archetype inside of themselves and in others. And that it's in Virgo, I think is really interesting because Virgo is known in some sense as like, you know, a neat freak, very sanitized, very organized, clean, right? And Virgo in another way could also be the witch. It's the herbalist. It's the person doing spells. It's the person with a refined relationship to the craft of the earth realm, which is witchcraft, right? So that, you know, goody two-shoes Virgo versus the witch Virgo, I think is like a place to start for thinking about Black Moon Lilith in Virgo. And if we're going to think about that in relationship to everything I've been talking about in terms of fantasy projections, I'll just say, personally, I've been having my own reflections about the witch archetype and how, you know, to me, like, witchcraft has something to do with working with the elements. It's very earth-based magic. And when you are working at a more cosmic level, working with God or something, you're maybe like in prayer. Maybe you can do energy work at the subtle levels or something like that. But there's a lot of going up. And there's something about witch energy that has some grit and some earthiness to it. And for me, when I first started to feel that part of myself, like my like witch energy, it was very overwhelming. Like I kind of put it aside to some extent and developed my psychological discernment, my psychological acumen, my spiritual life, my astrological life. And when I stepped back into working with the elements and being a magical person or being more witch-like, I can see why it took me some time to be okay with that. Because part of it was like, I didn't want to be in a space of like spiritual paranoia, of like having a bad day and being like, oh, someone must be, there must be a spirit in the room and like trying to exercise the spirit. Like that was just like something I decided to not look at reality through that lens. Let me like feel into what I really want to thread through here. What I think, you know, about this experience of the Piscean overwhelm or the Piscean kind of being lost in the sauce or the Piscean fantasy channels that really grip a person is that it's almost like a spell. It's like Hollywood. Hollywood is extremely a magical, enchanted field, huge glamour, really big spell casting, right, to enchant the masses. And there's a field of that. I've been thinking about this, you know, growing up near Hollywood, like growing up near LA, there was such a way that it made me think about my physical appearance, made me think about what I need, you know, the kind of money, the kind of status symbols I needed to have, and it really gripped me. And when I got away from it, I had this much different relationship. And when I go back to LA, I can have a good time, but I almost have to be more psychologically or spiritually armored to not start to feel bad about myself or start to feel like I need to like get facial surgery or just like, you know, like it goes that deep. So when I think about Black Moon Lilith and Virgo opposite this new moon, I'm just kind of thinking about where our illusions and fantasies have a glamour to them. Like they have a compelling magical feel to them. And that if you want to clean that up, if you want to change it, then you need to have your own magic, right? Like you need to be creating your own spells, so to say. So I'm not going to advise particularly about how to do that, right? But just kind of in terms of how you relate to spiritual hygiene, energetic hygiene, and being aware of like, oh, I'm in a state. I am in a spell, right? There's many different collective spells out there, stories that we're kind of conditioned with. And I think part of being in one's own power, kind of having your own relationship to your own magic, is being able to disentangle yourself from those threads and also create the threads that you want to be living inside of, which can be actually kind of advanced work. And you don't have to do it through magic only. A lot of that is mindset work and kind of like consciousness, paradigmatic work. But that being said, when you've done that, when you see the things very clearly, or maybe you think you do, why not also be in touch with like ritual and it in a more embodied kind of way? I hope that was clear. Like this is one that's still like gelling a lot for me. But, you know, the last few years doing like more embodiment work and ceremony and things like that, it's just like sometimes there's ways that transformation happens because we got into trance and sang and moved our bodies and we made like an herbal concoction or a floor wash or some kind of candle magic or did something that was more symbolic and magical and ritual-esque than purely practical in like this kind of mainstream paradigmatic consciousness, how that would see practical, like practicality. Another point that I wanted to make is that we can be generally mindful that life is collaborative and that while we do actually have to take actions and be agents of our own lives and apply effort in a desired direction, we can't just like dominate life. Maybe you can get away with it for a time, but it's not a great way to be in relationship, and there's ways it catches up to people. And when our desire around a dream is so fervent and powerful, and it's like we're the ocean wave that's swallowing or rearranging anything in its path. The thing is, nature also has dreams that it dreams through us. And not all of our dreams are wrong or delusional. Many of them are life-giving, meaningful, and truthful. It's a spiritual path of co-creation, and we have to be able to hear how life is talking back to us or how life is whispering to us or teaching us or adjusting us. When we have a dream that brings us to our knees in desperation or in prayer, let it be a spiritual awakening. You know, let it shape you. Let life shape you. Learn to discern your place in the scheme of things. I think there's really something about Pisces where we can be mindful of how we're part human, part soul, and how sometimes my soul and my spirit, it just drives me to do things that my personality thinks is the deepest cringe. And my personality has to like face melt and rearrange and deal with it. And then it expands, right? I don't block those signals and cues because my personality is like, I don't feel like it, you know? But there still is a conversation between them because I have to attend to my human needs too. I can't just blast through her with my whole like spiritual soul story because that would be imbalanced. Or I just like my personality couldn't handle it, right? Like you have to know your range and your capacities and your abilities. But there is a negotiation, there is a process, there is a conversation between our personality and our soul, as well as nature and the dreams it dreams through us and how we choose to participate with that or not. And there's something about that that is both really connecting, right? Like it connects us to the oneness. And it's also, there's a lot of ego loss. And that's generally challenging for people. Another point is that high potency spiritual energy, right? So like big, like spiritual healings, opening up to like greater sources of love, like really like receiving that like Piscean juice. Amazing. Love it. And it also does reveal things that are in the way of our prayers. It shows us our psychological and mental blockages, right? Like if you were just to start a compassion process, if you were just to start practicing giving yourself and others more compassion, I'm sure you'd become quickly aware of all of the places that you're judgmental and mean and critical, because you're starting to introduce compassion and it's going to show you the stuff in the way, right? So spiritual development and psychological and personal development inevitably go hand in hand, right? They ought to. And when they don't, that's where a lot of delusion kicks in, because a person is projecting their unresolved issues onto their spiritual unfolding, right? Like there's a difference between, say, like actual conspiracy and conspiracy theories that are based on someone's like completely dysregulated nervous system and paranoia issues and like emotional addictions that they're just projecting onto some demon out there. So again, we've been talking a lot about these kind of like spiritual maturity things where it's like if something's not working out for us and something is clearly off, we have to be willing to consider where we might be incorrect in our thinking or our approach and try something else or learn better ways. Paths of spiritual realization will illuminate our errors, right? Like the more wise we become, the more we can see our mistakes from behind us, and maybe the mistakes that we're currently making. And so it's like, there's not something wrong with that. It's just like the illumination is happening and it's showing us like where we can deepen into our spiritual unfolding. But when we refuse this process, people can become frustrated, deluded, messianic, inflated, right? Like my vision is correct and like all this resistance is just, you know, like some kind of spiritual warfare and I'm right. And like, you know, it gets delusional. There can be a gentle, compassionate balance around being able to learn and still be in connection to ourselves, our hearts, our dreams, and all of this with more of like an open palm kind of energy. So throughout, as I've been talking about this, my tone has been a little bit serious. And I think this is in part because real spirituality, it does include like fun and play and eros and trance and magic and pleasure. And it's not just that. It's not a joke. The universe is not, you know, the universe is a shapeshifter. Like God can show us many different forms of itself. And God does not only show up in our lives as a sugar mama, sugar daddy consciousness that grants our wishes and takes care of us, right? Like we have this template from being youthful and growing older, where in our youth, especially like our very, very young times, like we are not able to take care of ourselves. Like we depend on provision from adults in our species to take care of us, right? So there's places spiritually where we are actually immature and we are being provisioned because of that. And when we start to grow up spiritually, we become more responsible for holding ourselves and then also becoming providers, becoming people who offer service and offer provision to others. It's a spiritual growing up. And it's Saturn in Pisces, right? Like spiritual growing up is like right in that signature. But add it to Neptune and it's like there's places where there's confusions of spiritual youth and there's confusions of youth, right? Like places where we simply don't have the knowledge or experience yet. We think we do. We might have like the energy and life force and like the enthusiasm for the path, but there may be things that have been so unconscious or so unknown to us. And then we're being given opportunities to become aware and to become more responsible and to become, you know, more creators, right? Like there's different things that happen or become possible when we're more responsible in any way, but also spiritually, which is what I was focusing on. Growing up spiritually is not just about becoming wiser per se or having more spiritual sight. It's also how we integrate and live our lives as co-creators, as beings who are more responsible for the stewardship of their incarnation and their own potential. And again, also like participating, service, offering, like having something to give. So that's what I have for you about the new moon in Pisces. Let me know in the comments how that resonated with you and do you like this. And there is still time to apply for the Evolutionary Astrology Intensive. It is a profound, rich, deep transmission of astrology. It's also a serious and structured container at that, led by someone, myself, who's very deeply immersed in her astrology practice, both professionally, years into teaching, coaching, and counseling, and personally, years into having ongoing transformations and initiations supported by this wisdom practice of evolutionary astrology. The course is suitable for all levels, serving anyone who wants to go deeper into soul-based astrology. It has the bearings for beginners, but it's mythopoetic, penetrating deep enough to captivate more advanced students. This class will support you in having astrological literacy, whether you're just building that or you want to deepen your soul-centered analysis, working with Pluto and the lunar nodes. Every student has many opportunities to be personally reflected in this class. It's a container that really includes mentorship and conversation. And students also often report these expansive or kind of spiritual or emotionally healing experiences in the class, because what I'm doing essentially is offering you deeper connection to the archetypes. I'm introducing them and transmitting them. But then you'll have your own journey with the archetypes. You'll talk to them yourself. And that's where we become astrologically literate, is because we have a connection to the practice. We're not just memorized. We're not just learned. We are in relationship and in conversation. And that's what I model and teach and facilitate. So we're beginning April 2nd. General applications are due by March 29th. You're welcome to apply earlier. And if you are applying for tuition assistance, applications are due by March 15th. Tuition assistance is pretty much an honor system. I trust that people who can pay in full do. And then tuition assistance is for people, for example, in other countries where it's harder to go against the US dollar in terms of the conversion, or it's a struggling economy of some kind, for BIPOC, youth, single mothers, or your own relevant situation as to why you cannot afford the full price of the class. Again, it's an honor system in that those who can pay the full price do, and those who need assistance can ask for it. And this class is by application, however, to make sure that it's a right fit. So check out the link in the notes. I would love to have you, would love to have you apply, would love to chat with you more about the class. You can also tune into my recent Pluto Masterclass, Symbols of Power, for a transmission about the Pluto archetype, which is our patron planet, really, of evolutionary astrology. It's a form of astrology that puts Pluto at like a bottom line interpretive standpoint, which I find has a lot to do with reading charts, but it's also a lot to do with the wisdom practice of coming into contact with our own nature, right? This deep nature that lives within us, and that is our spiritual inheritance to steward in this life. So I'm going to leave it at that. I encourage you to like this video, leave a comment. I love to hear how things resonate for you. I also love to hear when you're a new subscriber and you make your presence to the channel known by saying hi in the comments. Always really love that. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you again soon.